This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 333, brought to you by Exo Manowar number 1 from Valiant Comics, graphically an iFanboy user like you.
Oh, we were born within an hour of each other. Our mother said we could be sister and brother. Your name is Deborah.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 333, also known as 333, My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hey, where'd that come from?
A sleepy Josh Flanagan. Yeah. We're from the website iFanboy.com, and we read comics, and lots of them. And every week, one of us writes the Pick of the Week review on iFanboy.com. We come back here to discuss that, as well as the other books that came out in the week, as well as what you thought of the other books that came out during the week. And we answer some questions, and we have a good old time for 7 years, 6 years, every week.
No, you say that with some fatigue.
No, I love it. I was just talking today to somebody about, like, oh, I got to get home so we can do the podcast, the highlight of my week. And, like, no sarcasm there at all. I can't even talk without sarcasm. That's the problem.
Believe me, brother, I know.
So before we get into the book, we're gonna talk about what happens, so you're going to get spoiled. Just be careful. Press pause if you haven't read your books. If you have read your books, feel free to listen and partake in the fun. This week, Josh has the pick, and Daredevil just rolls on.
Daredevil number 12. Last week, Daredevil number 11. Is it even possible to be Daredevil 13 next week? I assume not.
We've had consecutive issues in a book happen many times. In the past, before we did a podcast, I think Queen of Country had like 4 or 5 in a row.
Yep.
Gotham Central did that same thing, but we've never done the same books 2 weeks in a row, simply because that normally doesn't happen.
That's just crazy town.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm looking at next week's list to see if there's a Daredevil again.
Yeah.
And there is no. That's
jeez. I was like, no offense. I hope not.
you can tell we're professional because instead of filling up the time when he was looking at the list, we just waited quietly. No, you go do whatever you need to do. We'll be here. We won't make a peep.
Keep talking while I look.
I didn't read 11, so I picked up 12, and I was like, didn't this just come out? Even if I had read 11, I hadn't read 11, like, it felt like it just came out because they ship it every 18 minutes. Daredevil number 12 was the introduction of Chris Samnee to the Daredevil team, and I believe the way it's going to work is that he's going to trade off with Paulo Rivera.
Yeah, Marcus Martina's gone.
Yeah, I'm cool with that, dude. Samnee is one of those guys, like, forever that he's been in comics. People have been like, that guy should do Daredevil, and so it's kind of a perfect fit.
Is that
a
thing? I've never heard that before.
Oh yeah, no, all the time.
I mean, I think Samnee should do all the comics.
Yeah. But if you're gonna do one,
yeah.
Well, let me start with talking about the art, because Rivera, especially. I think has brought something really unique to this title so far. It's been really one of the things that's made it really special, in addition to the, I would say, jaunty Mark Waid scripts. They're jaunty. They're good. And Chris Sobney's bringing something very, very similar, I think, but also with his own, you know, with his own style to it. And I just, I had a ton of fun reading this because it was just such, it was one of those one-off sort of stories where Matt goes on a date with the girl who thinks he's Daredevil, and then there's a whole flashback to him and Foggy's relationship and the mock trial that was better than the mock trial that was in Community. And it was just all sorts of great acting and great cartooning. You know, I was looking at, you know, Somni drew the teacher, you know, he had a stroke, and so like he had to draw that in his face, and I was like, I've never seen that in a comic book, but like it read, I understood it, I got that. And it was just a really, like, I'm flipping through the pages now, and I just love the way it looks. I love the sort of heavy, you know, lines, the shadows on Matt's suit as you go through it, and you know, the facial expressions that are across all of these different characters who are all people, and they all look like different people. They don't just look like just dudes. You know, the sort of expressions on the face of the girl whose name I can't remember. It's something McDuffie, which I thought was odd. That
Kirsten.
Named after Dwayne McDuffie.
Yeah, I believe that's the case. Yeah,
that's a weird tribute.
Yeah, I thought that too. I was like, oh, that's nice and odd. But
you know, in the middle of all that, were like several actual laugh out loud moments. You know, there's one panel where he's in costume as Daredevil. He's talking to Spider-Man, and he's like, "You want me to do what? I'm going on a date with Black Cat. No, I'll do it." Just super snappy patter, really funny. Good stuff. You know, the girl's bra that says "You are Daredevil" on it, which, by the way, that is quite a lot of work.
Yeah. For that. The lace and everything. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It looks like, I mean, if at the very least she ruined what seems like a very expensive bra, because they're not cheap from what I understand. as I understand how it works. You know, it was a great single issue. It was everything that's been great about this series so far. At the end of the day, the sort of craft displayed in this one beat out everything else I read. It's just, you know, it's just a couple of guys working at the absolute top of their game. I'm trying to think. I feel like there was a person before Mark Waid, like 2 years ago, every time Joe Kelly came out with anything, we were like, what is going on with this guy?
Yeah.
That's the zone that Mark Waid's in right now. And he's been in it for, you know, 12 issues, like almost a year, basically. Just a treat.
Yeah, and I think this was a nice, I mean, you didn't read 11, but I thought this was a great palate cleanser. Mm-hmm. You know, from that kind of, you know, heavy kind of story, you know, with the crossover with Punisher and Spider-Man and the Omega Drive, and you know, there was mentions of it, and that story propelled a little bit, but mainly it was the flashback of the Matt Foggy story that was the majority of it. It's curious though, because about halfway through, I love Somni, but I was wondering, like, I don't know if I'm liking Somni on this. Because,
really?
Yeah, because I was a little concerned, you know, especially considering what Paolo Rivera has been doing and what Martine was doing before. And while it was a little, you know, like while it was in the same neighborhood, I was like, wow, you know, and I still kind of hold out on that because we didn't see Matt in costume in this issue at all.
Yeah, that was one panel.
Oh, it was in a shadow.
Well, it was the Spider-Man. He was Daredevil.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, and I'm looking at the one where it's Matt Murdock in shadow. Yeah, but by the end of the issue, I was feeling less about that. Like I do want to see more shadowy rooftop in costume, like true Daredevil stuff. But by the end of the issue, I was reminded why I love Somni, and I was like, okay, cool, I'm on board.
I know what you're saying, but like we've had a lot of that shadowy Daredevil rooftop stuff.
Yeah, no, I know.
That's why the Mark Waid stuff has been so good, because it's not that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I just wonder how long he stays in the book, because he's been on, what, four books?
They
in the
can't
last...
seem to keep him. Yeah, they can't seem to keep him.
And that, to me, was the thing I was wondering as I was reading it, going, yeah, this is great, but for how long? Yeah. You know, because it's tough when you've got a guy like Samney who we love, but you just can't get any traction anywhere because he moves after four or five issues to something else.
And I don't think that's up to him.
No, yeah,
I'm not saying
either.
It's his fault. I'm just saying how long until he moves to another book, which is...
That's almost everything, other than some dude on a DC book whose name you don't know.
Not to the
frequency that they've moved him around in the last year. Yeah. He's been on four books in a year.
Yeah, he's been. I mean, he's like a pinball. I mean, like I feel like they've been knocked. Like there's a Marvel pinball machine, and there's a ball with Chris Omni's face, and it's been knocked around. And it was.
I got
a.
You really think they have that?
I think they do, yeah.
We should ask somebody. We, we must know somebody over there. It's like, let me see a picture of that. You know, but you know, I think that he's made a pretty good mark on most of those things.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
So, like, I'm reading this, and I can't help but be reminded of the train full of German World War II clowns.
Yeah,
I just
no.
think, you know,
well,
it's all,
well, I think
all
I think the
stuff.
Reaction to that is that hopefully he's on Rocketeer over at IDW for a while, and Marvel's going to suffer because they haven't put him on something that he can really run with.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, but I wonder, you know, I imagine there's some people who are really good at staying on something for a really long time, and then some people might not be.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he is. He did what?
Listen, don't you say 10? A bad word about Chris Omni.
You'd be hard-pressed to hear me do that.
Yeah.
He did, what, 10, 11, however many issues of Thor Mighty Avenger?
Yeah.
Nine.
That's yeah.
great.
And then it's a really good point you bring up is that they're going to be doing the Rocketeer story together.
Well, it's clear that they work well together.
Oh, I can't wait. They're for whatever this sort of tone that Wade is using right now and the sort of level where Somni's cartooning is at, I think with when you're going to mix it with that property, the Rocketeer, that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
Well, this was definitely a fun palate cleanser, as Ron said, really continues on the great series that is Daredevil right now. But to me, if you're talking about the best book of the week, it was Earth 2, far and away, no question, no competition.
And I might throw a little shocker in there. 100% agreed. I don't think I have been excited for a DC book more than after finishing this issue.
I read it and I was like, why wasn't this in the initial wave? This book. We're going to talk about all the new DC books briefly, but for me, they were all good. And it hurts that they're not in the first wave because all those books got a lot of attention.
Yep.
Whereas I think a book like Earth 2 would be much bigger book had it come out initially with the other books.
I totally agree. And I think I don't know about Josh, but it might just be you talking because the only book I picked up was Earth 2. I didn't try any of the other ones.
World's Finest was a companion book. It followed the girls through the portal into the you know other you know the main DCU. So that was in a sense it was very much together.
Yeah, that kind of But you know, in terms of commentary on DC's Wave 2, this is a little bit of a stretch.
Well, I don't want to get to them, but they're all good, I thought. But
really?
We'll get to each one in later. But let's talk about Earth 2 for a second. Nicola Scott should never not draw comics.
Oh, and it's funny because I feel like it's been a while since I've seen anything by her. And just page after page after page, I'm like, she is amazing. She's great.
Yeah. Big dynamic pages, lots of detail. There's no skimping in these issues. And that's one of the reasons why she can't do a full 12 a year. But still, what you get when she does draw the issue is just fantastic.
Yeah, and everything from the action to just the scene at the end with Alan Scott just sitting on the plane, like just the conversation, like when the stewardess looks out the window, like I thought that was great. So good.
She does a good job, like Samny, in giving everybody a distinct look and face and feel and body. And everyone looks different. But to me, I love the idea that it played with expectations. Everybody freaked out because all the initial imagery for this book and marketing was Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And they were like, what the fuck? Where's the JSA? Why are we following these characters again? And they opened with them. The parademons have invaded Earth, too, and they've subjugated the world. And there's not a lot left to defend against. And Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman are all killed by the parademons.
That must have been great.
Which is awesome. Well, not only that it was parademons, so tied into Justice League, so you're like, okay, this is a little familiar, you know, a little familiar to what we just read with Geoff Johns, Jim Lee, but then the fact that it completely, you know what, if this feels like Elseworlds.
Yeah.
And this feels like a good
Elseworlds. In a sense, it is.
Totally. And by opening with killing the Trinity. Like, ballsy, awesome decision. And not only that, it was completely well done in service of the story. I get a sense of a history behind these characters, you know, because it's Earth 2. It's a different Earth. And, you know, there are a lot more, you know, there are subtle differences and the costumes are slightly different. But you get a feeling of, like, a history there that I would like to know more about. But then also it's like, boom, this is over. And now we're doing something new, and I love it.
I liked that I didn't know it's the Elseworlds theme. Like, I was like, are these going to be good, bad? Are these going to be bad Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman? Yeah. Like, I didn't know, and it kind of could have been anything, which I thought was fun about it. And I liked the parallel to the Justice League in that way. Like, and I like this a little more, I think, because it was just skewed differently. You got a different look at the world, you know, when this Batman goes down, you do feel it a little bit. And you're like,
there's a great scene with Huntress, or who is or Robin, I guess, in this world. She's his daughter who became Huntress in the regular DCU. And I like that we're meeting a young and different We meet Alan Scott. We meet Jay Garrick and his harpy of a girlfriend, Joan, who
she's a
goddamn saint to the regular DCU, but here she's kind of a bitch.
She's a big C here. let's call it like we see it.
No, but I love it that because you know I love the original Golden Age characters. I don't know why. I don't know what it is.
Like,
Alan Scott, Jay Garrick, or Al Pratt. We got to see Al Pratt.
Yeah,
I mean this was like as a I'm not a DC fan, but as a casual DC fan, this just hit every note that I want.
James Robinson's sphere of excitement.
Yeah, exactly. sphere of excitement. There you go.
Sphere of excitement. I think the thing that's really nice about that, there's got to be a good bit of vindication in it for him because you know, dude's gotten knocked around a lot for the stuff that he's done, and I don't think that the fans have seen the parts of him that they've liked the most in the past. And you know, there's been bits of it. The Superman stuff was great. The Shade's been really good, but there hasn't been a thing where the fans are like, "Oh, this is what we want." This feels like when everyone was excited about JSA that Jeff Johns was doing a while ago.
Yeah,
like it's that kind of.
The tone is very similar.
Yep. Yeah, and it's good. It's the right tone for it. It's not necessarily the right tone, for other books. But no, totally great book. Also, I thought.
Yeah, awesome.
So quickly, the World's Finest number one was in the Earth 2 book, the Robin and Supergirl get sucked into a portal and they end up in the new DCU world where they become Huntress and Power Girl. And this issue basically explains from them landing into becoming the new heroes and the new identities. And it's got art by George Perez and art by Kevin Maguire and
by Paul Levitz, right?
And written by Paul Levitz. And as bad as the coloring continues to be on the Kevin Maguire art, this was a really fun issue. Paul Levitz is still a very good comic book writer. It's a bit old fashioned, but it works. And he wrote that Huntress miniseries that was pretty solid last in the first wave. So this was a lot of fun. If you like those characters, this was a better Power Girl than what we saw in the Mr. Terrific book, which was terrible. I don't know if you remember that going way back to that last year. If you enjoyed those characters, they're found here. Now, to me, the second best book was Dial H number one.
Wow, I heard negative things about this.
China, Mivel, and Mateus Santaluoco, and it's I don't even
know.
Now we have to talk about this book every time it comes out.
edited by Karen Berger, it is totally a Vertigo book, just in the DCU. It's a horror book. This really pissed me off that it didn't come in the first wave because this book deserves an Animal Man sized audience, and it's not going to get it. It's not going to get it. But it's a horror book in the DCU with a bit of a weird superhero twist. If you know the old Dial H hero, it's similar. This sort of overweight kind of guy who used to be athlete and a good guy, but sort of fallen into despair when he lost his job and his wife. He finds a telephone booth outside of his apartment where if he dials the word hero, he pops out as a different kind of goofy superhero each time with different powers. And
which I do love that concept.
Yeah, first he was Boy Chimney, this weird sort of skeleton character with a giant chimney head, And then he was I put it in the best panels of the week feature. I want to get the name right. He is Captain Lacrimose, who makes everybody feel their worst memories and feeds upon their despair. It's a horror superhero story written by a popular horror novelist, edited by Karen Berger. And any other time, it'd probably be a Vertigo book. Lots of fun. If you enjoy the Animal Man series right now, I think you'd probably enjoy Dial H.
Oh, crap. Now I got to go back and pick that up.
G.I. Combat, real quickly, it was a standard sort of solid war story. There's two stories, one by Palmiotti and Gray, one by J.T. Krull and Dan Panosian and Ariel Olivetti on art. And one is a bunch of soldiers go into North Korea on a secret mission. They run into dinosaurs. And then one involves the unknown soldier in Afghanistan. So it was just solid war stories. That'd probably be the least good, but they were all pretty solid.
I think for me the highlight and the chuckle of all DC books was the double page Watchmen spread, which included the seething with meta headline, "It's not the end of the world," which I was like, wow, who grew the balls at DC?
He's not there anymore.
So, oh well. But interesting week for DC. I just thought if you're going to make a big deal out of Wave 2, four new books and a couple of creative changes and some other books is you could have had a little more, oomph, but maybe that means because they thought more books from the first set launch were going to get canceled, so maybe that's good. So, who knows? I don't know. But I'll go back and check it. It sounds like I've World's Finest. I don't really need,
No, you don't need. I would say give Dial H a shot. I think you particularly, I think actually you both would like it for different reasons, but okay. If you come across it, give it a shot.
So in our now in our weekly AVX kind of segment, this is a lighter week for AVX with just Avengers vs. X-Men issue number 3 coming out, and I don't really think I had any other crossover books.
How often are these coming out? Are these every 2 weeks?
Yeah, they're bi-weekly.
They're bi-weekly for 6 months, so 12 issues.
Wow.
So now this one was so the first two issues were written by Jason Aaron, and this is the first issue with script.
No, Bendis was the first.
Oh, it was
issue.
Bendis, then Jason Aaron, now Ed Brubaker, as the circle of characters of writers continues. But I thought the first 2/3 of this was awesome.
Yeah,
was great, because what happened was it picked up where the last issue ended, with Hope, you know, kind of making a run for it and doing a little Phoenix flare, and you didn't really know, you know, kind of what happened. And this picks up where, you know, it seems like as if the X-Men are surrendering to the Avengers, and each side are talking about what they're going to do, but then Wolverine sees right through it, and it's Cyclops, you know, doing a ruse, making everybody think that totally doing a switcheroo kind of thing, fooled the Avengers so they could get away to go find Hope. Which that whole scene was awesome. I thought it was great. But then, you know, then the Avengers go off and they have their they're trying to track Hope. They split into teams, and Cap takes Wolverine with them, and then Cap decides to fight Wolverine in the back of the plane and kick him out of the plane. And at that point, I'm like, we're back to contrived. Like, I was just like, you had me. You guys had me at the beginning of it. And then Cap is arguing with Wolverine basically about how he, you know, can he trust him, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they're having a decent conversation. And then Cap just goes, damn it, I didn't want it to come to this, but you're not listening, and punches him.
I think that you have to own that with this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, whenever two people are together,
they're going to fight.
They're going to fight.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about something else on a different podcast.
Yeah.
And it was similar.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a good point. But but that said, the other note I wanted to make is that I've heard a lot of people criticizing Romita Jr. on this. And on this issue is where I'm starting to see it as well. Like, I think they're rushing this. I think he's rushing it. There was a couple of Cyclops heads where I was like, he looked like he was having a stroke. There's a couple of panels here and there.
Somebody should have done that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. There are a couple of panels here and there that I'm like, ooh, that's not a good look. And I don't know if it's because it's Scott Hanna's inking them and not Jansen, or I don't know what it is, but the Romita art is a bit off in my mind.
So when Wolverine regenerates,
yeah,
because he regenerates in the opening pages, how does his body know to regenerate just the mutton chops?
I don't know.
Shouldn't he get like a full beard
head
and
of
have
hair,
to go and
yeah,
shave
exactly.
it?
Those are adamantium laced mutton chops.
that's all I was thinking as I was reading this. Because in the first page, he's regenerating from basically nothing,
and you see the facial hair.
his hair is coming in, and his mutton chops are coming in, but not anything around. I mean, can he not grow? But then he says his stubble. It regenerates a mutton chops and then stubble. I don't understand how that works.
And it stops growing at a certain point.
Yes. So. How does it know when to stop growing?
These are the tough questions.
Facial hair in the Marvel U has been a real sticking point.
Yeah. But
just the mustache.
But yeah, so while I wasn't loving the first two issues, this one had me. They got me back, and then it faded. So we'll
and see. It lost me.
And it lost me.
Like the cure for cancer.
I'd say that the biggest value in comics this week was Mind the Gap number 1.
That's for sure.
48 pages? A lot of pages. Two issues worth of pages.
Yep.
For the $3 cover price. I would describe this book from it's Jim McCann's new creator owned book from Image with Rodina Esquejo.
Yep.
And Sonia Oback on art.
On colors, yeah.
And I would describe this as it reminded me of a TV show.
Yeah,
it was like a sort of quirky TV show about a afterlife. What's the word I'm looking for when you're between the two worlds?
Purgatory kind of thing.
Yeah, limbo.
Limbo. Yeah, there you
limbo.
Go.
Limbo.
Yeah.
Limbo, where you know where Beetlejuice is.
I mean the premise is that the main character basically gets shoved on a subway platform. And is it a coma?
Because Tiki Bar TV's Johnny was not there.
Yeah, exactly, to save her.
it's going back.
But so she gets shoved in. She gets hits her head. Now she's in a coma in the hospital. But she's very much awake and alive in her own head. And then she, the big twist is you find that she has the ability to jump into other people's bodies. So it's got that, I don't know, supernatural, but kind of, you know, like quirky, different kind of
supernatural.
Yeah, supernatural kind of, kind of thing, you know, and it becomes a mystery as to who pushed her and why, and we get introduced to her whole family and the players and that sort of thing, and there's a lot going on. I think that's why it was so long.
Yeah.
This, you know, like I said when we talked about it in Light Week, this is unlike anything on the stand, so if you're looking for something different, that'll be great. But like any book that, and this is the challenge, like Jonathan Hickman with what he's doing with Secret, is that you've got a bunch of normal people, and so keeping track of everyone is going to be key.
They all do have a different look.
They
think they made a really good effort at giving everybody sort of different facial tones and hair color and those kind of things. But they're all sort of well built young people.
You know, what would be good would actually have a little chart at the beginning with all their relationships to her.
Yeah,
And how they all fit together, because I think after a while it'd probably be hard to remember, because there's basically 10 suspects and two people who we know aren't the attempted murderer, and there's some sort of conspiracy. There's a hooded, masked, you know, killer who's trying to kill her and kill other people. So there's a whole other mystery going on here, and the whole mystery is who is this person and who hired them and all that stuff. So I think it would be good to have some sort of chart that says, "Hey, this is Elle's brother. He's a dick.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this is her girlfriend. She didn't do it. Like, you know, stuff like that. Because if it's a mystery, then I think one of the problems with a book that's similar, which was Morning Glories, was that after a while, you just kind of lost the thread of everything.
Yeah, and it really got kind of mushed together, and that's kind of where Morning Glories, I think, lost a lot of its momentum.
So it's going to be key here for them to sort of keep the momentum happening, because in a book like this, where you only get small chunks as opposed to, you know, an hour every week, it's hard to keep track of who's who and what's what and what motivation. So that'll be the key challenge here for the creative team. But it was a good, really good start. Really, really fun.
And interesting to see the Morning Glories connection. So Rodin, the artist, does the covers for Morning Glories.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, I he's done interior work previously before, but nothing I've seen and not an ongoing. And there are some pages in here that were just solid. Like the pretty much the majority of the L inside of her head pages, the black kind of background ones, those are the ones that got me. The double page spread where she's trying to remember.
A little McKelvey-esque.
Yeah, the shot of her in the bee costume in the beginning. Sorry, you know.
Blind melon.
Yeah, I know. Woo.
I don't know that I agree that money is one of the most unique baselines of all time. Yeah. But that's not here or there.
Right, yeah.
That's a comment on Pink Floyd. That's a whole other thing. But there's definitely touches of pop culture through this.
Yep.
Meaning that it exists, you know, like in the world that we live in, I guess, you know, with the stuff that we know.
Right. It's not the driving force of it, you know.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not joke a minute pop culture stuff, which would be horrible.
So definitely. I mean, first issue, jump on board. You got to talk about, you know, like you said, the value. I mean, it was $2.99, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, $2.99 for a double size issue. I mean, Image is doing it again. So.
Guys, the Summer of Valiant is not only coming, it's here.
It's begun.
It arrived this week.
Yep.
It all started this week with X-O Manowar number 1, the first issue of the all-new Valiant universe from New York Times bestseller Robert Venditti, who wrote The Surrogates, and Eisner Award-winning artist Cary Nord. They took his family, they took his freedom, they took his world. Now he will give them war. X-O Manowar number 1 is in stores right now. You can check it out in every comic store. I saw a lot of people checking it out at the store I went to this week, and... there's going to be three more books coming from Valiant for the new Valiant universe. So if you're into, people were very excited on the website. If you want to check out some new interesting stuff, check out the new offerings from Valiant.
Cool. And we thank them for sponsoring us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. So Supreme number 64 is really the Eric Larson taking the reins. Number 63 came out, and that was Alan Moore's last script, and it basically ended. It was one of those. Similar to Bendis handing Daredevil to Brubaker, where leaving Daredevil in jail, it pretty much ended on a cliffhanger of all of a big battle happening, and I laugh and go, and I wonder, you know, where's Larson going to take this? And the opening double page spread, the pages 2 and 3 involve the word balloon. Let the bloodbath begin, and that's exactly what happened. As Larson pretty much kills nearly everyone. In a Shakespearean,
one way to do it.
In a Shakespearean kind of approach, but this is just—I mean, taking what Moore did with Supreme is, which if you hadn't read it back in the '90s, was really good. It was really, really good. Is a daunting task, and you know, and I definitely, while I'm a big fan of Eric Larson, I don't think he's of the same writing caliber as Alan Moore. He's a different kind of writer.
It's safe to say that. I think you're safe there.
And I'm just being, I'm just being honest, you know. But I think what he did here was he met it in the middle, where he took what Moore had done and then added a little bit of his own flair, and now he's in a position where they can go from here. So I think it handled really well, and this is just a blast to read. The art look, because it's Larson and Corey Hampshire on art, and so it's not totally 100% Larson-esque, because Corey Hampshire adds a little bit of his own flair to it. But you know, this has been a blast to read. I mean, it's two issues in, and I'm personally loving it. So, yes.
Ron Smallville season 11 number 1 was The Tale of Two Books. Did you read this?
I've been reading it in the digital format because
thing all the way through?
Yes.
All right, so it's written by Brian Q. Miller, who wrote the Fantastic Batgirl series, who was a writer on Smallville.
Yep.
And drawn by Per Perez, who was an artist on the Fantastic Batgirl series. And here he draws a completely different style in an attempt to mimic the actors, and it's a disaster.
Yes, totally agreed. Totally agreed. Did not learn anything from George Janti and Buffy
Yeah. It's the thing you fear most from licensed property books in that, and this is even, I guess technically this is a licensed property book, is that whenever you got an artist who tries to draw the actors' faces, either get a good job or it looks completely wrong, and the storytelling suffers because you look at these horribly deformed faces.
Yeah. They need to be reminiscent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, look, if you look at the Gary Frank cover, which I don't know if you got in the digital version, you know, they're reminiscent. He does that, you know, and he used to do Superman reminiscent of Christopher
that
Reeve.
Was great.
He wasn't drawing Christopher Reeve. He was drawing a face that was similar to it. So just, you have to break away from trying to get that exactly right. But story-wise, I thought, tonally, it was like going home again.
I know. It was like I kind of wanted to go back and watch the scene where Lionel fires everyone at the farm. Yeah. I've been like every week as I've been reading these, I'm like, I kind of want the show to be back.
Because that was 10 years, and story wise, it was great to go back and be able with all these characters again. And now Clark is Superman, and he's flying around, and he's got a new suit, and that was fun. Just the art was just rough.
Yeah, it's rough. It's hard. And it's funny. Just on a note, a lot of people are probably curious on the digital side and how it translates. Basically, what's interesting, what I was looking for is, so for the digital version, they're basically taking half a comic page, and that's the page on the digital version. So like the page one is the upper half is page one digitally, page two digitally is the lower half. But in the comic book, it all collapses into one. And it was interesting.
Is it free or is it paid?
No, it's paid. It's like 99 cents or so, or whatever the price is. I forget what it is. But what's interesting is how they use backgrounds to smooth out those segmenting. But the tough thing is that they haven't been able to stick to it. In that there are several full comic page splash pages that what they do is on the digital side, they show half the page and then you swipe and then you've got to rotate the tablet and see the full page. So it's like, dude, you got
to. They haven't figured out what they're doing. Yeah. And if they're going to do a book like that, they have to format it for digital.
Exactly. Like you can't have both. You got to commit one way or the other.
Which is basically how do you describe the current state of digital comics?
Yeah, pretty much.
Just trying to have both. All right. Yeah. Was I the only one who read Fury Max number one?
Hell no.
Not for want of trying.
Yeah, Josh got screwed by the diamond card.
And it's not available digitally, so
right.
Yeah, none of the Max books are. So I'll just read the first page tells you all you need about the book. My name is Nick Fury. I've had a bullet in my head since 1944. I can't seem to die. Don't even age much. I fight and fuck like a goddamn demon. I lick up war like it was sugar. These are the things I've done for my country. And that's all you need to know about Nick Fury as written by Garth Ennis, who is the perfect writer for Nick Fury.
And honestly, Goran Parlov
was great.
Amazing. And this is only three issues.
Did this have a shot at pick of the week? Had I been able to get a hold of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would have been up there.
Yeah, it would have been up there. Yeah.
I tried.
It's there's not a lot happens other than Nick Fury talking tough and being awesome.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, so it's basically that page is Nick Fury sitting there talking into a tape recorder. I guess he's, you know, kind of recording his life kind of thing. And in this issue, he's telling a story of being
1954 in Indochina.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the station chief, and the new green CIA agent has showed up, and there's trouble, and there's a German French Foreign Legion soldier who killed a lot of Jews in the war. So that'll be an interesting little conflict when he comes up against Fury. This is Josh. You're gonna love this when you finally get your hands on it.
Super. Next week, I guess.
So, Sweet Tooth number 33.
Yeah, it was sideways.
It was sideways, and it was picking up a gimmick that Jeff Lemire did previously in between story arcs, where it's kind of like a children's book, where he illustrated it, and then there's prose, except the fact that he didn't commit. That you got about halfway through, and then it goes back to comics.
You know what? I was kind of all right with that because then it went back. And I remember thinking, I was like, I'm looking, I'm going, is this lazy?
Yeah.
Is it? I'm not sure. Also, the type, come on.
Yeah, the type, the font. Yeah, don't get me started on the font. Yeah, that was
wrong. That was awful. And I know things like that now, and I don't want to because I was happier before I did. Yeah. But then he came back. I felt that the comic pages in the middle were good. They were welcome.
Yeah.
And it was funny because it was like, I really felt like we were nearing the end of this story. And now I feel like we're like two-thirds.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yep.
I don't know how I feel about that. I kind of want it to end because I want to know the. No, it's just, you know, I feel it's 33 issues.
It's 3 years now, right?
Yeah, and it's like each one is like a minute and a half of the story, and you're like, you know, which is cool, but you know, we read all those other Jeff Lemire books, you know, in like a single volume or like a graphic, you know, this is.
So I moved the trade on this book. It was too slow. It was too slow.
Yep.
It is quite slow. So.
It's a good story, but just in issues, I just found it too light.
I could see that. Yep. I understand that. Get on with it.
amazing,
get on with it.
Amazing Spider-Man 685. You know, I know Connor, you know, I've talked a lot about Dan Slott. You're not a fan of his work on Spider-Man, and you dropped it now, right?
A little bit. Yeah. I was talking to Josh about this earlier today. There's, for the most part, I'm just not a fan of the situation, the status quo, basically whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. He and Spider Island was the big event and all that sort of stuff. This Ends of the Earth storyline might be Dan Slott's finest hour. Mm. Like it, and it is. I'm enjoying this so much. It's a great premise. Doc Ock is on death's door. He's dying. He's wheezing. He's got all these problems. He has developed technology that's going to fix the ozone layer and wants to be remembered as a savior, not as a villain. And so he gets the Sinister Six, and they're doing stuff all over the globe, and they tap into the UN, and he's saying, you know, we'll fix the ozone layer. You just got to pay us, you know, each $2 billion, and that way everyone will be set, and they'll stop being villains and all stuff like that. But, of course, Spider-Man doesn't believe it. He knows that there's something more nefarious, and we're – I don't know what issue we are. I think we're, like, on the third chapter of the story. I don't know. Like Doc Ock might be doing this – to help people. I don't know, but Spider-Man's so convinced that he's not, but he has no proof. And so he's running around the world with Black Widow and Silver Sable now trying to stop Doc Ock and the Sinister Six from being able to shoot the satellites into the space and stuff like that. And it's like real stakes, and I literally don't know where the story's going to go. And it's got all the touches of Spider-Man that you love. You know, he's public enemy number one because everyone sees him trying to stop this. But the UN is like, well, let's give Doc Ock a chance and let's give him the money. And it's really good. So, yeah.
Cool.
How many jobs does he have?
Just right now he's focused on trying to stop Doc Ock. But he still works at Horizon. That's it. So
you should get to it. He works at Verizon?
Horizon.
Like one of those kiosks in the mall? Yeah. So. Come over here, I gave you 30%.
Want a razor? We got razors here.
So yeah, so great job, Slot. I can't wait to see how this ends. I'm like literally like this was like it's inching its way back to the top of my stack in terms of the most book I'm excited about each week. So
super cool. Well, those are all the comics that we have something to say about, but you also have things to say about comics as well that we may not have. So if you made your pull list at ifanboy.com/comics. Then you can rate and review and do all that stuff. And you made your pick of the week, so we can tally up the top five pick of the weeks from the community. Connor, lay them on us.
Number five was Exo Manowar, number one with 1.5% of the votes. Number four was Action Comics, number nine with 2.1% of the vote. Number three was Mind the Gap, number one with 3.0% of the vote. Number two was Daredevil, number 12 with 31% of the vote. And number one was Earth 2, number one. With 44.1% of the vote, 3, 4 out of 5 were number one issues.
Wow, so many people agreed with the Earth 2. That's awesome to see. Cool. So Adam Gabory wrote
Andrew.
Andrew Gabory wrote
Gabory.
Andrew Gabory. How you doing, Andrew? Wrote a review.
We call him Sting.
He wrote a review of Action Comics number 9, and he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and 2.1% of you agreed with him on that being the pick of the week. And Andrew says, after last month's conclusion of the first arc of Morrison's arc on Action Comics, issue number 9 is a nice change of pace. I gave the comic a month's reprieve from the chopping block, and I'm glad I did. The Superman of Earth 23 is a compelling character with a unique personality and story. His world feels different and well-constructed, which is par for the course with the Morrison universe. I'm not sure how it keeps his identity a secret, but I'm definitely in to see where this storyline goes.
Yeah, this was – he doesn't keep his identity secret. This was actually really good. It doesn't do anything to help the idea that this runs all over the place and there's no focus.
Yep, agreed.
On the other hand, as a single issue, I thought it was really strong.
Agreed.
And really interesting and really fun. In this issue, Superman of Earth 23 is the president, who's also Superman, but he doesn't wear glasses or anything, so he just looks like him all the time, which is the thing with the identity. But I thought on the whole it was an interesting story, fun.
Again, very Elseworldsy.
Yes, very totally Elseworldsy.
Yeah, and, Earth 23.
Again, you just don't know the what the point of the series is because it's sort of all over the place. But as a whole, as a story, as a one shot story, it was great.
Yep, cool.
So,
boss, Nod Nolan read The Spider number 1 from Dynamite. Gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick 3% is just under 1%, and he says, as an issue number 1. This is a masterclass for other companies. The main character is introduced via internal monologue over exceptional fight scenes. So many people get the emphasis on the basics versus action very wrong in a series debut. But the balance here is faultless. Also faultless is the introduction of the supporting cast. Each is given a smoke space and focus time to give weight and prominence to each one. Not knowing about the spider's origins, the emergence of some of the supernatural elements did surprise, but this exploded into a portentous closing page. All in all, this villain surpassed my wildest expectations, and I hope a long run is coming.
All right.
Simplify.
Dynamite, another Alex Ross, I think. I don't know. Maybe not. I think he might have just done the covers. Who knows?
I don't know.
Don't mind me.
John Cassaday did a cover. I know that.
Oh, wait. Whoa. It is the first week of May, and we got our first It's Hot.
It's hot.
It is not hot here.
I closed all the windows and everything because it was noisy outside for this recording, and now all the heat is trapped. So
there you go. That's what's going to happen. Go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can see all the hot comics that come out each week, and you can do your pull list. You can do your pull list and come back and rate and review them, write a review, and get it on the show. You can also write in the show at our email address at contact@ifanboy.com, like Daniel from Waco, Texas, who says, hey guys, I've just started getting back into comics after a 4-year hiatus and have about $25 extra to play with in my budget. I was already buying Batman and Saga, but what are 5 or 6 other books you would recommend buying on a monthly basis? Marvel, DC, Image, superhero, sci-fi, adventure, it doesn't matter. I'm just looking for great storytelling from a great medium.
So right. This is really...
We're never going to agree on this.
This is a great... Well, no, let's each... Okay, so $25. So let's say... Five books. Okay. What 5 books, not counting Batman or Saga, do you recommend?
Daredevil.
Agreed. Well, no, it's counting, so you've really only got 3 slots.
What do you mean?
Counting those books?
No, he said...
No, 5 or 6 other books.
Yeah, he wants 5 or 6 other books.
Batman and Saga... I'm buying Batman and Saga. What are 5 or 6 other books?
Yeah. Okay, so Daredevil, I agree.
What is it? What's going on in Image? There's got to be.
I mean, it depends on what you're interested in. Like we talked about, Mind the Gap, which is a thriller. This Fatale, which is Brubaker and Phillips doing noir occult kind of stuff.
Manhattan Projects.
I was just gonna say Hickman. Manhattan Projects are secret. You can't go wrong with either of those.
I would say Prophet, American Vampire.
Prophet. Wait, we're still on Image. Hang on. Prophet is probably the best.
We each have to come up with a list of 5.
Okay, all right. Well, we were just brainstorming.
Basically, you're asking us what our top 5 books are. We're not prepared for this. I'm not barbecuing any food.
I know.
This is exactly how this is the challenge. Are you guys pros at this or not?
All right, go. 5 books, Josh, then start.
Yeah, go, Mr. Pro.
American Vampire, Daredevil.
Exactly.
Super fun time, happy hour?
Yeah, that one. when that Rocketeer book comes out.
Yep, fair enough.
Oh, you can't pick
Rocketeer Adventures. Rocketeer Adventures.
Yet. Rocketeer Adventures, Connor.
2.
All right. That's the only
one. Yeah,
it's... Wow, Josh.
I'm so tired.
We're going to let you hang yourself.
And whose fault is that?
Fine. Okay, fine. Well, I'm just going for me then. Hellblazer, Thunderbolts.
Did you want American Vampire or no?
I said that. It was first thing I said.
Okay, so American Vampire, Daredevil, Rocketeer, Hellblazer, Thunderbolts. Okay, Connor, go.
Daredevil, Wonder Woman.
Oh.
The Manhattan Project. Fantastic Four. Wolverine and the X-Men.
Chew.
Okay.
I can only pick five.
Chew! You didn't need to yell that. I agree. Daredevil, Uncanny X-Force, Manhattan Projects, Prophet, and my fifth one.
You would say Uncanny X-Force over Wolverine and the X-Men?
Well, Wolverine and the X-Men. Add that in as well. Yeah. So I love them both. Yeah, I love them both. Yeah, why not? There you go. There you go, Daniel. Tell us right back in and tell us what you decided about. We want to know.
He's like, I couldn't even keep up.
Yeah.
Mike from the UK writes and says, as one of those mythical new readers who started collecting with the New 52, I find myself cautiously optimistic and just a little bit daunted about the impending Night of the Owls crossover. My question is that with the Night of the Owls, the Culling, and the Animal Man Swamp Thing crossover, do you think these events will be successful, or do you think it was a bad idea for DC to attempt even small events like these so soon after the relaunch? Also, with Night of the Owls in particular, what books will you be getting? Are there any new titles you previously weren't buying that you will be getting because of the crossover?
Well, before we get into it, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't know if I said it publicly or not, but...
You did on the last show.
Again, DC gives me a great gift of meta commentary with having a crossover across Scott Lobdell's books called The Culling.
It's true. I'm going to probably drop Superboy once it starts.
No, seriously, I was at my shop and somebody was like, dropping this, and I'm like, Culling! It's like the Spider-Man, the kid in the Spider-Man t-shirt with the black eye all over again.
Yeah, Superman t-shirt. Yeah, the we talked about this last week about the books. We're just going to buy the ones we already bought, which for me is a couple. For them, it's just Batman.
But
the bigger question is it a good idea to have crossovers 9 months into the relaunch? And I don't see the problem.
It's inevitable. It's going to come naturally. Yeah. I mean, like the Animal Man Swamp Thing, I'm excited for.
Sure.
You know, like I want to see what Snyder and Lemire have cooked up. You know, the Night of the Owls, I'm just buying Batman. I'm not buying anything else. The Culling, I've culled already.
But there's a bunch of books crossing over. There were two books this week that ended with other books. Like I don't remember what they were. One of them is going into Firestorm. Good luck with that. And the other one.
Oh yeah, I read that one. Oh, and Resurrection Man is doing with Suicide Squad.
And Justice League International ended with going into Firestorm.
The thing is, this is par for the course.
Exactly.
I mean, like, is it too early? It doesn't matter.
Yep.
It's the sales are on comic books are almost always on a downward slope, with the exception of The Walking Dead, which doesn't make any sense to men or beast. And so people who are in charge of comic books are going to say, well, what can we do to goose these sales? Although I don't know. I wonder if it still does goose sales, or if that's just a leftover.
There's a lot of conventional wisdom in comics, whether or not it's true or not anymore.
I know with the Marvel, like with the AVX, I assume it will. But with the Culling?
Yeah. How can that help? I mean, and what they're trying to do, be thankful. The one thing that they're doing is be thankful that they are crossing over books that make sense. They're doing an event within the Batman books. They're doing an event within Animal Man Swamp Thing, which are kind of together in their little corner. They're doing the Scott Lobdell Teen Titans Superboy.
But then that makes sense too, because he's on the Teen Titans. So, yeah. I mean, they're all organic.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like they're saying, hey, let's take Superboy and throw him in Batman and see what happens. You know what I mean? So like, at least it's not like that level yet.
But it also doesn't mean it necessarily be a bad story. It's all about the execution of anything.
No, but with historical perspective on it, you can kind of...
Yeah.
No, that's not true at all. I mean, it's more like guest stars at this point. These aren't events. These are people guest starring in each other's books, which has happened in every book.
Justice League International was across, like, had OMAC, and it was like, and now I guess he's in the book now, I guess.
I think he's going to join the team,
Which is awesome.
He's got to go somewhere.
Yeah. But there was one DC book where, like, they had somebody on the cover, and it was like the first two pages, and then they just moved on.
Well, they did that in Grifter really quick.
Yeah.
Ollie Queen's here. And we're like, oh, God.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone says when they see Ollie Queen now. All right, so if you have any questions, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We also get voicemail, and a bunch of you called in. That's awesome. And Mike wants to know what bugs us.
Hi there, Ron, Connor, and Josh. This is Mike from Houston, Texas. And I have a big question for you guys. Do you guys ever get upset when you read something about comic books or comic book movies on a popular cultural website or a general news website like Slate.com. I was just reading, I was just listening to Slate's culture podcast yesterday, and they pretty much trash on the Avengers movie just because they just don't like comic book movies. And it's just really kind of sad when you hear them talk about something in a way that's so derisive, and then they go on talking about something like about clout on social media stuff. It just seems to be a little skewed, and it just raises my nerd anger. So just wanted to hear what you had a thought of on when you hear something very disappointing about the genre that we have loved for so long. Thanks, and hope you guys have a good day. Bye.
Now, nothing used to make Josh more angry than this. The question is, has life beaten it out of him?
No. No. It's among my largest pet peeves on Earth.
It's why we do our site. Not why, yes. but it's partially why we do our site.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's what we do.
It's what we're about.
Stop.
It just happened.
No, I take the thing is the art form of comic books.
Hold it together, Josh. Hold it together.
It's a really unique and special American, I tend to think of it as an American art form, but obviously it's branched out and there's different flavors of it everywhere. But it gets a bad rap because it gets associated with nerdery and not like the cool hip kind, but like the other kind. And I think comics are a great way to tell a story. I always have. That's all there is to them. So when people do that thing where they and it's just writers going for an easy gag. That's all it is at this point. It's the thing that makes people write biff bam pow, comics aren't for kids anymore. It doesn't matter what it is. Or somebody, it was Evie, tweeted something about like a writer had written, if you don't know about the Avengers, well, or your boyfriend hasn't told you already. It's just it's this awful stereotype that won't stop, because the fact is at this point everybody likes superhero movies.
Yep.
Everybody.
They like the characters. They like everything about them. They just don't like reading them.
It does. Yeah, but it's still, people make fun of the idea of the genre altogether. But it's like this thing that people are making fun of. But everybody goes after it. Everybody likes it. It's a hell of a lot better than the Jersey Shore.
That's for sure.
You know, it's a huge pet peeve, and I think that it tends to, out of its own momentum. It's not. Like a specific directed malice. It's its own momentum of this thing that goes on and on that stops, I think, you know, the industry from being taken seriously in a certain way, other than an IP factory.
Yeah.
And you know, there's all sorts of reasons for that. It's not just that, but it's an element of it that bugs me and always has, always will.
All right, we got one more voicemail about something that bugs me.
Hey, fanboy, what's going on? Sean from Long Island over here, on my way to go see an Avengers screening. Very excited. Anyway, got me thinking about Avengers versus X-Men. Always thought myself an Avengers guy when it came to the Marvel U. Has one of my favorite characters on it. But lately, I'm thinking I'm rooting for the X-Men for this. And it's not because I like the characters better, but it's because I enjoy more X-Men right now. With Jason Aaron writing Uncanny X-Men, his recent run on Wolverine, and then we have Remender writing Uncanny X-Force. And on the Avengers books, I'm only reading one of those, and that's written by Rick Remender and has like half X-Men on the team. So what do you think's going on right now? You picking a winner for this? Favorite characters? And who are you enjoying more right now? Because we have to pit them against each other. It's fun. All right. Thanks, guys.
Well, of course I want the freaking X-Men to win. Come on. and I got a real problem with the way this whole event's going. As I talked about it last week, and I'm just going to keep on bitching about it, is that the vilifying of the X-Men, I won't stand for it.
They're dirty mutants, Ron. They're dirty mutants.
I know. Robert Kelly, I thought we were rid of Robert Kelly and his insipid, you know, influence in the government, but no.
They're not like you and me, Ron. They're different. Therefore, to be hated.
You shut your whore mouth. But no, but my problem with it is that
can't they just be normal?
Right. Why do our heroes have to fight? Why is that the great story?
Ron, right-thinking Americans all wouldn't want the Avengers to win because they are good, upstanding young men and women
right.
who put their lives on the line, and they're not dirty mutants.
Right. But I do have a point. Like, this is Civil War. This is Civil War II.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I don't want that. We had that already. I'm tired of the heroes fighting each other. Fight villains. Make the world a better place, fuckers.
I bet they've
been doing that though. They've done that since Civil War.
Yeah.
That was five years ago.
Get together and fight villains.
Yeah, I bet you. Yeah.
All
right. If you got any questions about what bugs us, that's a new segment on iFanboy. What bugs us? Call 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
You ever notice creases in the cover?
I really wanted to make a joke, but I realized that no one would know it was a joke, and we'd just get in way too much trouble.
Yeah.
What bugs you?
We have some other podcasts that you need to go listen to. There's iFanboy Don't Miss, which usually comes out every Monday, where we talk to a new creator, a creator about a new book coming out. Last week I talked to Kieran Gillen about Exiled. This week with all the Avengers madness, so we took a week off, so we'll be back next week with Don't Miss. So go to iTunes and subscribe to it.
Yeah, Make Comics Podcast is another podcast we do about making comics that I talk to Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience, former editor of IDW and Marvel Comic Books, and we pick a topic and we expound on that for a short amount of time.
It's the power system.
We're going to do our own material.
I know, but it's...
You're the one telling us to do our own material?
Stop.
It's been 17 years, Connor. Let it go. 10 years, 12 years. Let it go.
What other podcasts?
We also are going to be talking about The Avengers. You may have heard this movie out called Marvel's The Avengers or Avengers Assemble, depending on where you live in the world. And we, of course, talked about it. So go back on the feed on iTunes or go to ifanboy.com or go to wherever you listen to a podcast. It'll be behind this show where Josh, Ron, and I talk about the latest Marvel Studios film, Marvel's The Avengers, which is dominating every corner of the globe.
As it should.
Those are podcasts. Listen to them.
Spoiler warning. We like it. Anyway, all right. So I think that wraps it up for this week. I hope everyone knows that it's an appreciation of the other podcasts. We're not trying to copy it. It's just that it's just so much better than us.
Check out
Hey! Whoa!
It's true. Check out iFanboy.com for Josh's Pick of the Week review, soon his Book of the Month review, all the great discussion, tons of Avengers discussion. If you saw the movie, you want to talk about it, you'll be able to talk about it on iFanboy.com. We got all kinds of reviews.
You're glossing over the most important thing that's been done all week, which is the celebration of Phil Coulson.
Phil Coulson week was iFanboy. We had new Phil Coulson content every day of the week, culminating in a wonderful essay about the character by our own Paul Montgomery, who is just so much better than us.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So go read that. If you're a fan of Phil Coulson, you need to check out all the content that Paul did this week on the wonderful Agent Coulson.
Yeah.
On twitter.com/iFanboy, facebook.com/iFanboy to follow us and get alerts on all the new stuff we do.
Exactly. And as we mentioned earlier, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We'd love to hear from you. Any questions or anything that you got, just ask us. We're here.
Listen, we laid off the entire advertising and marketing team.
We did.
Well, I know that some of those guys had families, you know, but you know, times are tight. So we rely on you. If you like the show, then you're the one who's going to have to tell people about it or the website or anything. Leave a review on iTunes for the podcast or, you know, link the stuff, retweet, do all that stuff. Put it up on Facebook. Tell your friends about it. Word of mouth, whichever. You guys are our PR and marketing team, and we really appreciate that. So if you think there's somebody out there who will like the show or the website or an article or that Phil Coulson fan who can't find the right website for them, then help out.
That's us.
Yeah.
We're going to change our name to I Coulson. I hope that's
okay.
I'm
fine with that. That's a better name.
If we're going to change the name – and, you know, there's an argument to be made for it. Yeah, exactly. That may not be the best way to go.
All right. We'll bring it up in the meeting on Monday. So, all right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
There's an IM chat that just says, don't make me laugh while we're doing the show, which is ridiculous.
Get married, I would be living down here.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.